We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We are joined by a young man I'm excited to speak with, who I will introduce momentarily. But first, I wanted to give a shout out to our presenting chess education sponsors, Chessable.com. Hopefully, you guys are keeping up with the pod and heard my recent interview with Grandmaster Ben Feingold, who has a new course out on 1D4, Han Shu. Friend of the pod has a new course out in the Milner-Barre Gambit against the French defense. And of course, they have a whole array of tactical, positional, endgame courses, whatever aspect of your game you're working on. So be sure to check out what they have that's new, as well as the list of my favorites, which you can find the link for. So to introduce our guest, again, I don't tend to interview very many teenagers on this show. In fact, the last one I interviewed was Hans Niemann before he really blew up. But our guest is another New York City roots gentleman who I really wanted to speak with because I think he's doing meaningful work. He is running workshops to teach mindfulness practices to teenage chess players and young chess players at different, some of the bigger school programs in New York. He's also a USCF master, as we will be discussing. He has many other interests as well, as I'm sure we'll be getting into, but I'm primarily interested in discussing his organization, MindMates, which I've heard great things about, and his own chess journey. So let's welcome National Master Nate Schumann to the show. Welcome, Nate.
Thank you so much, Ben. I'm really excited. I really appreciate you giving me this platform to speak about my journey and especially MindMates and what it's become and hopefully what it can be. So I'm happy to jump right in. I'm excited.
Yeah, likewise. And Nate, as I mentioned to you, so I'm excited to discuss those things, but also I've been wanting to get the boots on the ground report of chess blowing up in high school, and we're going to get to that eventually as well. Although, of course, you go to the famous famous in chess circles, Dalton School, famous in New York circles as well, being one of the elite private schools there in New York. But it's got a rich chess history with Josh Waitzkin from the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer being alum. And more recently, I am Casa Corley of chess.com. So that brings me to my first question, Nate. Was it through Dalton that you were introduced to chess?
Yeah, so Dalton has had a really rich chess history, like you've said. I started chess in kindergarten, actually, through the chess curriculum at Dalton. So while you're in Little Dalton, which is kindergarten through third grade, you end up having chess as a mandatory class. So you create a real sense of chess community, especially at a really young age. There's tons of benefits that come with playing chess at such a young age. I found an immediate love for chess. I learned it when I was there from David McAnulty, who retired a couple years ago, and Beatrice Marinello, who I believe you actually had on this podcast, has taken over and done an absolutely phenomenal job. But yeah, I learned it in a kindergarten. I gravitated towards chess from the very beginning. The competitive nature of chess and the fact that you can win or lose, and it's really, or draw, but that it was a 1v1 kind of sport. And I got into kindergarten, and because of that, we had, like, I would say like 10 to 15 really good, decent chess players from a really young age. And since then, our grade has gone on to do tremendous things scholastically because of the roots that I think Dalton has provided us, as basically adding it to our curriculum. So, yeah.
Yeah. So Dalton, we should say, of course, it's won many, many national championships over the years. And I understand that FIDE Master Gus Houston is in your class. Is that correct?
Yeah. Gus is a very, very good friend of mine. Me and him have kind of spearheaded the Dalton team. He's in my class. And actually, I believe as of the current moment, me and him, our grade has won 15 national team tournaments. 15 national championships as a team, which has kind of been unheard of. I believe that we've won almost every single one since second grade. So it's kind of been a surreal experience for all of us. But you know, I've had tremendous friendships from it, and Gus being one of the strongest ones I've had. So yeah, he's a dear friend of mine, and it's been a phenomenal journey with him.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I'm guessing, yeah, like, because you mentioned Beatrice Marinello and David McAnulty, who trained me as a teacher way back in the day. So if I, of course, know these people.
Yeah.
I know these people well. But so I'm guessing you had a fairly structured environment, obviously starting with the school curriculum. But what would you say is the sort of general principles of how chess is taught in Dalton? I'm guessing it involves a lot of tournament play, being that you're in the chess hotbed of New York City.
Yeah, a lot of tournament play. I think because we live in New York City, we would have a lot of opportunities to play at, you know, these tournaments. Like, I remember vividly, like, Hunter tournaments, PS41, a lot of these novice sections. Then you slowly, as you get older and stronger, build your way up, getting these small trophies and then bigger trophies as you get older. But yeah, it was a lot of, because we were starting in kindergarten, there's a lot of the basics there. But there would be a lot of live play. I remember that we would always have something called early morning chess, where the stronger kids would come in before the school day at like 7 a.m. And get to play with each other. David would have a lecture too sometime, using his like special board where he kind of would like tuck the pieces in out of the board I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of live match play. I wish I could remember it a little more clearly, but I'm sure it was a combination of over-the-board chess and good instruction.
How did you feel about waking up at 7 a.m. to do chess?
For me, I've always been an early morning person. I loved chess as a kid. So I think because I was so young, I didn't really realize I was getting up that early, or didn't really care about it. Now, as a teenager, we like sleep a lot more than I liked. As I didn't like sleep when I was younger, so I probably like that idea. But it was a great opportunity, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Okay, makes sense. And so, yeah. Nate, you've got a very solid infrastructure, obviously, for learning chess, yeah, being that you've got the teachers there. I know that the way it works, they'll also be like attending tournaments and doing game review there. So I'm guessing there's not a huge amount of sort of self-motivation necessary, especially maybe in the earlier years. But did that become a part of your chess journey, or have you been like cracking books and doing tactics on your own, or has there been enough infrastructure in place where you've mainly been able to sort of learn through going through the Dalton sort of pipeline?
Yeah. So no, to reach, I think, the levels that I reached and Gus reached, I think there is a lot of more additional work. I think that, unfortunately, because we have like 120 kids per grade and there's only really one chess director at the program, being David and now it's Beatrice, it's really hard to manage a lot of different kids. There's a really, really strong sense of chess presence from K to third grade. And then as you leave Little Dalton, there's less of that in middle school. And that's where you kind of expect the kids who really like chess to continue to chess, to start to work outside of school and have their own chess coaches. I mean, I always had a separate chess coach even since I was in kindergarten or first grade, just because of the levels I wanted to reach. And that'll get me to like what I've been doing in high school and Gus as well, trying to maintain that sense of community and that level of chess strength beyond the Little Dalton program. But I've had to work extremely hard besides just the Dalton skeleton. But I think I do attribute a lot of my successes to the skeleton that Dalton's provided and the roots that it's given to so many kids like me.
Okay, I didn't know that it got sort of less structured as the years go on.
Yeah.
Do you mind saying who your coach is?
Yeah, so when I was really young, my first chess coach was Corey Evans, who I think he got me to a strong level, I'd say like 1300-1400. And then I worked with a guy named Yevgeny Feldman till I would say I was about 9. And then ever since I was 9 years old, I've actually worked with Maxime Delugy, who is pretty well known in this chess sphere. But he's been a massive, massive help to me. He's like, I seriously consider him a part of my family. And we've worked with him. He's traveled internationally with me to a lot of the world youths. We've gone on, it's just been a really special relationship that we fostered, but he's done a tremendous amount of great work for me. And, I feel indebted to him greatly.
Okay, great. And like, what sort of routine do you have with Max? Is it predominantly game review? Is he the Grandmaster Tlugi, I should probably say, is it, since I don't know him personally, is it primarily game review? Is he giving you puzzles, all of the above? Like, what's your routine with him like?
It's a combo. I mean, I think a lot of it was opening. There's a lot of opening prep that we spent a lot of time on, teaching me new openings. London being a big one. Obviously, I've had to – I initially started to learn King's Indian with him, and then I've start to learn some other openings as well. I'm okay. It's okay. Airing it out. But it would be a lot of opening prep. We would play a lot of live chess against each other. He would give me some books. We worked with a lot of Dvoretsky's book a lot, because I know he knew him personally. We would analyze a lot of high grandmaster games and really give me positions in the game, seeing if I can kind of figure it out. But we'd also have a lot of like cool, fun games as well. Like we would always play something called two move chess, where you get two moves per one move. And if you're in check, you can only move once. So there's a lot of like calculation there too, and seeing ahead. But we've honestly touched on a lot of everything, a lot of intuition work as well. And giving me puzzles and just having me kind of say the first thing that comes to mind and working and kind of like understanding pattern recognition in that sense as well.
Okay.
Cool.
And we should probably mention, I mean, a lot of listeners will know Max Delugy's name. Of course, he's been famous here in the U.S. for, decades as a very accomplished player, but Magnus kind of blew up his spot with the whole Hans Niemann thing when he mentioned his name. So you and I, Nate, don't have to say too much about that, but I gather that was a rather, and Max, of course, defended, Grandmaster Delugy defended himself publicly, so listeners can look into that. But I'm guessing that was kind of a bit of a tumultuous moment for Grandmaster Delugy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he handled it really well. He always seemed to me composed throughout everything. And I didn't want to talk about it to too much extent with him, just because it was his personal situation. But I stand by him, and I I appreciate everything he's done for me. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And so, Nate, obviously, you've been a top Scholastic player.
Yeah.
Again, recently made USCF Master. But one thing we haven't mentioned is you had a massive plateau. Like, and this is something that comes up on the podcast all the time, especially because obviously I'm an adult. It's predominantly adult listeners. So we get stuck for years, and that's something that you've been through. So what did this teach you? Correct me if I'm wrong. You were 2100 about 6 years ago, and I know you have other interests in your life as well, but then finally broke through in this past year. Is that correct?
Yeah. So even longer, unfortunately. I reached 2100 when I was 9 years old, basically clinching All-American team like 3 years in advance. And I was at a really, really high level. And it took me a really long time to crack this next level. I think I went through tremendous amounts of frustration. I lost a lot of joy for the game. And that is where, you know, I'll segment to that when I talk about my MindMates program. But that's where the roots of the program started. I had a massive plateau. I felt like I was getting stronger. And even when I said this a year ago, before I hit my big breakthrough, I think me as a 2100 a year ago was much stronger than me as a 2100 7 years ago. My maturity dealing with situations, I think every part of my game is stronger. It was just that I didn't reach, I wasn't able to have this breakthrough. I would go up, 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 and then one tournament would knock me down. And I think a lot of that was extremely frustrating, and it was tough to deal with. And I continue to play a lot of chess, but I think I attribute a lot of that also to I slowly played less and less chess as I've gotten older. I've just with so many different interests, it was hard to completely focus all my attention to chess. And I had to make a decision when I was younger if I wanted to like homeschool or spend like 3 to 4 hours a day on chess. But in addition to chess, I've been a big athlete my whole life. So it was hard to, I wasn't able to play tournaments every weekend. You know, it started to be tournaments once a month, and then it started to become like maybe 5 tournaments, then always play the nationals. But regardless, I always made sure to play all the national tournaments and be there for my team. And I think that's been so like powerful about my journey, the Scholastic aspect to it. But like you said, a lot of people go through plateaus, and I think mine is a very big one, 7 years and of still playing chess consistently throughout. But that's what made me finally getting it as an 11th grader playing, you know, not as much chess as I've played, you know, almost in any other part of my life, but finally getting that breakthrough, I think made that moment that much sweeter. But I think it's a testament to resilience and not getting too beat up on yourself throughout the whole process.
Yeah, well said. And I think a lot of people will be able to relate to that feeling that they're getting better, because you always feel like you're learning new things, and especially you, because you're young, so you're maturing. You know, obviously to go from age 9 to age 16, that's a monumental change in how one sees the world and physically and so on, socially. Adults don't have to deal with that, but we still feel like we're learning and our ratings just not reflecting it. So I'm curious, Nate, like when it sounds like you're spending less time on chess, but was there any sort of change that you would pinpoint, or do you just maybe the pressure was off? What do you think happened?
Yeah. I mean, this segment, so 8 years ago, I can tell a story. So I reached 100 and I was always top 3 in the nation for my age. And I would reach the final round of the national championships, but I would always fall short. I think I would be going into the final round 5.5 out of 6, 6 out of 6. And all I needed was a draw or win in times to win the whole tournament. And I fell short, I would say, on 4 to 5 different occasions. And that broke me. And 8 years ago, I decided to meet with a sports psychologist. Figure out why this breakthrough isn't happening. And for me, a lot of our work transcended from, rather than focusing on the outcome, focusing on the process. Kind of that's the most important thing, and taking the finding joy in chess. And for me, I lost joy, honestly, completely. I wouldn't look forward to playing in a lot of tournaments. And it just wouldn't be a healthy environment for me. And I noticed that that stress would bleed over to other parts of my life as well. And I just decided to not focus on the result in that, focus on the process. And even now, especially over the past year, when I've had the least amount of pressure on me, I think that's where I've succeeded the most. And that's where I think this breakthrough is coming, where I don't really think or care about the result. And I just tell myself before every tournament that no matter what happens, just try to play your best chess, but also just be happy and enjoy what you're doing. And I think that's the biggest message that I can, that I've told myself, that I've told all the kids that I've worked with, and that I can tell the listeners. That I think that's what's propelled me forward. And that's where I think, going back to the chess part of it, a lot of times I would take draws against higher rate of 2400 opponents when I have really good positions, or I wouldn't fight for the win just because I would think of like the small rating change at, you know, like the 5 points I might go up by making a draw, and just basically just focusing micro on every single game and just overanalyzing the rating. And this year I was like, I'm going to play aggressive chess. I'm not going to think about who's on the other side of me. I'm going to play my game of chess, and took all the pressure off my shoulders. And this year was honestly the greatest year of chess I've ever had, between the two national championships, making master, and then my team also winning US Amateur Team East. So, yeah, I think that's the big message that I can send.
Well, it's good that you stuck with it. It sounds like it could have reached a breaking point. Did you ever consider quitting?
Yeah, I mean, I would say quitting is a strong word. Chess is so unique to who I am, and it's been a massive part of my childhood, and I never wanted to fully separate from it. But there were a lot of times where I would like avoid playing tournaments, and just I did play a lot less chess, but I never thought of fully quitting just because of how much it's done for me, how many friendships I've built, you know, and how much I still love the game. I think for me, I didn't find joy in the idea of like going to a chess tournament and playing, but every single time, regardless, when I would set down at the board and the game would start, all my nervousness would leave and I'd actually genuinely enjoy being at the chess board. It was just all the buildup and the thoughts going around, you know, your busy mind of winning or losing, rating, but the actual sitting at the chessboard I always really enjoyed.
Yeah, that's pretty relatable as well. Well, Nate, I feel like this has all been a great build-up to the MindMates origins, so we got to take a break and hear from our sponsors, but then I want to get into talking about your organization, so we'll be right back.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back. So, Nate, at what point did you create MindMates amidst these years that you described of some frustration?
Yeah, so MindMates was something that I've had the idea of doing for, I'd say, the past 3-4 years. It's something that I really started last year and that I'm really implementing this year. I would use all the tools, basically, that are included in MindMates, which I'll go into, but I would use them for myself. And I think it's done a tremendous amount of benefits for me because of, you know, I wasn't even playing as much chess as my competitors, but somehow I would always seem to perform at nationals. And it's interesting because my rating didn't move from 4th grade to 10th grade. However, between that time, I won 4 individual national championships, purely based, I think, on the work that I attribute to MindMates. So MindMates was something that I started to create programs for myself to use. And then I started to give it out to some teammates, not knowing the name MindMates, not really thinking of it in any type of way. And then over the past 3 years, I had the idea of going to some schools to work with kids and share them, you know, something that so important to me and something that I'm so passionate about. And then this past year is when I've actually been able to go into the range of schools of Chess in the Schools, a massive chess program in New York City, which hits a lot of different kids from all over the city. Impact Coaching Network, ICN, and their Gift of Chess. I think they have tons of feeder schools. And then also IS318, which, you know, I would say there's Dalton and then there's IS318 as like the two powerhouses of New York City chess. And I remember watching Brooklyn Castle when I was younger and thinking, I was thinking how like these kids are so old because I was so young. But working with these kids and now they're like between 6th to 8th grade. So it's kind of crazy to think about. But working with them has been really special. So I've been able to hit ranges from 2nd grade with Russ's kids, Russell Makovsky from Impact Coaching Network, to 12th grade through the College Bound program at Chess in the Schools. So I think this material has intrigued kids from every demographic, every age, every chess level. And I've had a really great response. This summer I'm going to be going in and out of chess camps and just continue to do what I'm passionate about. And that's sending this message and sharing what I think is so valuable to other kids. So that's how MindMates started. I have a lot of different ideas going in the future. I think what I've always told people when they're like, why didn't you start this earlier? Why are you only, you know, like, I even said this, I wish I started it earlier because I just graduated 11th grade actually yesterday. And you know, I have 12th grade coming up, and then I'm off to college. So, but what I say is, I only think that I reach a level of maturity this year to do the things that I'm doing, to go and pitch a presentation to like a board of a school and the heads of an organization, and to be flexible with the feedback that they give me. And I think it was only this year that I was able to handle all this and carry myself the way that I feel like I've done. But at the same time, like you said, time-wise, it's something that would have been cool to have started a little earlier. But yeah.
Okay, I got a few follow-ups, Nate. But first, just for listeners, I want to help them form a few connections that they may or may not have connected on their own. But for listeners who heard my interview with Tony Ballard, of course, it was a prisoner in Kansas, and you mentioned the Gift of Chess organization.
Oh, so awesome.
He's affiliated with Gift of Chess, which is run, created by Russell Makovsky of the Impact Chess Network. So just wanted to form that connection or help listeners, remind listeners of that. And of course, Elizabeth Spiegel, who strongly recommended you for this pod. As I said, I don't interview a lot of teenagers, but her word carries a lot of weight with me. And she, of course, has been on the podcast in addition to starring, being an amazing teacher and starring in Brooklyn Castle.
I wanted to give a shout out to Elizabeth. I mean, she's been such a cornerstone for me and this MindMates program. She's Like even you said, reach, you know, had me set, gave me a strong recommendation to you. And she's been such a great person to bounce ideas off of, connect me to people, and be really supportive. And same with Russ, and also the heads of chess in the school. It's been a really amazing experience. And they've created such a great foundation for me to now build off of. So yeah, there are a lot of connections, I think, with New York City chess. You know, there's a lot of people know each other, and there's a lot of crossing of paths. So like you just alluded to, but hopefully for sure, with the gift of chess, I was really wanting to go into the prisons this year, but I talked to Russ, definitely I'm going to try to go into the prisons next year and not just play chess, but also do some of this mind mates work with them. I think that'd be really powerful and a really unique experience for me to have.
Well, that's great. And I want to follow up on that in a bit. But first, Nate, why don't we rewind a bit and just hear about your own relationship with mindfulness? Like, when was the first time you started to meditate, and how did you react in the early days?
So, I mean, as you can imagine, I started when I was 8 or 9. And I met with my sports psychologist named Stephen Kahn, he works with tons of top athletes, soccer players, especially NASCAR drivers. He actually tragically passed away this past fall, which was a huge blow to my family, but a lot of this work is a tribute to him. You know, he was like an uncle to me, but he's done so much for me and my family. So my work with him would center around, I did not want to meet him, at first. I was a pretty closed off, stubborn kid, when I was 9 years old. And I don't think a lot of 9 year olds like the idea of going to a psychologist. But I was open to seeing him once, and it was a sports psychologist. So, the first time I started to work with him, he tried to keep it fun, which I think is such a big aspect to mindfulness in the work that I've done. So he would have me play video games that are actually controlled based on your breath. So he'd hook me up. It's a lot of biofeedback work, which is a big part of my training, where he would hook me up to sensors in my ear, on my finger. And I'd play this like jet ski game where the jet ski would only move if I'm completely calm and my heart rate is completely settled. I'm having even breathing patterns. And I think it was a really fun experience for me, but also extremely frustrating, because at times when the jet ski wouldn't move, the first initial, obviously, and I'm extremely competitive, and I see all the jet skis just go past me, is to get really angry. But in those times of anger, you have to, in the most important times, then you got to settle, take deep breaths, and that's how you actually end up winning. That story, I think, can touch on a lot of different parts in life as well. I think you can take that lesson in a lot of different ways. But that was a memory that stuck out to me the most. And that's how I started getting into mindfulness. And I think, like you said, going from 9 years old to 16-year-old is a massive, massive difference. And I think a lot of maturity goes between those stages. But I think, scientifically, that's where your body and mind changes the most. And a lot of our work changed along with my maturity and the levels of training and mindfulness training that I've reached. You know, the exercises would get harder, doing like Wim Hof breathing, starting with like 2 minute meditations all the way going up to like 30, 45 minute meditations. So my mindfulness journey has, developed and grown as I've grown as a person and a competitor. And I think that's, how you continue to perform at such a high level, is the work that you're doing is, kind of being a companion to, my chess performance. So, yeah.
Man. Well, first of all, the jet ski game sounds crazy. I have some experience with meditating, and I can imagine, like, because as you say, as a competitive person, your reaction is like, you know, you want to react with aggression. You know, if the goal is to win, you want to be forceful, but it requires the opposite of that. I'm curious, Nate. So it sounds like you may have had some initial hesitance, but you were on board reasonably quickly. I have tried to teach mindfulness practices to my kids, and they were a little, this was a few years back. They're now 10 and 7, but I can just tell you that when they were like 7 and 4, it didn't take at all. So I'm curious, when you go in to run these workshops, obviously, I don't actually know the age you're primarily working with, and we'll have a question about that in a bit, but how do the kids typically respond to it?
From what I've experienced, every single time I've done this, I've actually been taken aback by their maturity. And I told them that I wasn't that matured and that focused when I started this. And I think a big reason that is because I'm also, I wouldn't say a kid, but I'm a teenager and I'm closer to their age. And I think they connect to me more and respond to me more because I kind of seem, you know, like more realistic, like rather than like a PhD psychologist who is like 40, 50 years old, and there's this real like I don't know, like patronizing aspect of them. But I really try to foster a sense of community with these kids. But like you said, I mean, if I'm, you know, meeting with 20 to 30 kids, there will be a couple of them that are dozing off, you know, like poking fun at the kid next to them the kid next to them might be actually trying to focus, and then his friend is, you know, poking him, you know, whispering in his ear. But I always try to, you know, not get bothered by that and just, you know, guide them along as best I can. A big part of the reason that I think they stay focused because these exercises that I give them are really short. And that's why I think it's super, super impactful, because anyone can take this exercise that's only 1 to 2 minutes. All the exercises that I give them and a lot of the ones that I share with MindMates are 1 to 2 minutes long. And I think that's where, you know, when you, with these kids at the younger ages, if you go any longer than that, I've done some 3 minutes, one 5 minute, but anything longer than that, that's when, you know, they're like, they're like opening their eyes a little bit, or like, you know, picking their head up, looking, but I try to tell them just stay as focused as they can be. But they definitely handled it a lot better than I did when I was their age to start. So kudos to them.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, I do have a question from a Patreon supporter of the podcast. So the way it works, Nate, is people who help support Perpetual Chess can send in questions. And you mentioned some people with PhDs, Dr. Benjamin Porteau, who I interviewed on the How to Chess podcast. He's been on Chess Dojo Talks, and he's the coach of the, or not the coach, not the chess coach, but the performance coach of the England's Women's Olympiad team. And he recently released a course called Mindfulness for the Tournament Player, which I've had a chance to check out and would recommend for any listeners interested in trying out similar mindfulness-based techniques. But in any event, Ben's question is, he says, congrats on the great work, and he'd like to ask what the age of the youngest kids that you work with, and do you have to adapt techniques or vocabulary to use with these kids?
Yeah, I definitely think I do. The youngest ages I would say are like, I would say right now, like fifth graders, but I know that this summer I'll be working with some groups will be second to like seventh grade. So that'll definitely be a unique challenge. But I have altered a lot of my vocabulary to simplify it down for them. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to translate for an international audience. So that's like age 8 to second grade.
I would say like age, I would say ages 8 to 8. I mean, some kids were 18. Yeah, I would alter a lot of my vocabulary to kind of break it down and simplify it to their terms. I mean, I've had to dilute a lot of the exercises down as well simplify it and still make it effective, but try to make it more easily, you know, graspable for them. But, I don't talk about any like the science behind it, like any neurological things that are going on, like the brain waves that are happening, which I would like to say, like, aside from all this like actual work that I'm doing face to face, I've taken a real like academic interest in it as well, doing a couple of summer programs on it, a couple of research papers, to really fully like understand the science behind why what I'm doing works, and, you know, really being aware of the material that I'm, you know, giving to the kids and hopefully giving to you guys as well. I've had to change the way I talk about some things to make it more understandable and absorbable for the kids.
Makes sense. Yeah. And let me ask you this, Nate, like when I started meditating, and I think this is a fairly common experience, often when you first start doing it, it kind of feels like nothing's happening. You're just sitting there and your mind is racing and you're wondering like, why am I doing this? And for me, it was definitely weeks of doing it every day where I just felt like, you know, why am I spending my time this way? And I think a lot of people try meditating and end up giving up because of that. So I worry that if you're presenting it to kids and just doing short little exercises, that they might just be like, well, that didn't do anything, and then move on. Do you ever have that experience?
Yeah. I mean, that's where I'm obviously trying to build this asynchronous aspect as well, which is a big part of my summer plan, building a website, which is soon to come, and hopefully an app. But with these kids, that's why the first exercise that I always teach them is called palming, where I learned it from a tennis coach of mine that I worked with when I was younger, and I still occasionally work with him, called Peter Rennert, who actually played number one singles at Stanford, ended up winning the national championship, and ended up becoming doubles partners with John McEnroe, who was very well known for both them for smacking their rackets, having a really hot, you know, high tempered personality. And my coach Peter Rennert took, after he stopped playing, a very zen, you know, he took a whole new approach to performance, and he completely altered his life from basically taking the he talks a lot about just like effortlessness, but not in a bad way. So I learned this exercise from him, palming, and it's basically where you close your eyes, and then you put your palms in your eyes, like you place your palms like this, and you apply a little pressure. And when they do this with these kids, it takes 1 minute. Every time you finish doing it, everything is immediately like really bright and fuzzy. And you can notice there's a very noticeable difference that happens. So I think that's where I kind of hope the kids kind of like, oh my God, there's something actually happened. And I'm not just like sitting here breathing. But that's something where, then I do another breathing exercise and they feel the same way. A lot of ways for me, a lot of kids feel tired after they do these exercises, which I feel the same way too. And they, even though some of them are supposed to keep you awake and some of them are supposed to make you just listen to your body more. And if your body's tired and your mind's tired, you're going to feel tired. And I think that's a big part of mindfulness, is being, you know, fully aware of your body and your surroundings completely non-judgmentally. And like what my sports psychologist would always tell me is that if you're tired or if you're hungry or if you're thirsty, accept that, and you owe it to your body and mind to, you know, treat it that way. So take a quick power nap or do one of these exercises. And that's basically what I'm trying to provide with these kids, these 1 to 2 minute exercises that, you know, palming I do before a chess game, during a chess game, after a chess game, to reset and recover. And I think that's a big part of my program as well, teaching the kids how to recover before matches. And for me, a little segue, but at Nationals, I attribute a lot of my successes to the routine that I've established. I don't input any of my games in between matches. Right after the match, I'll go back to my room, replenish, take a power nap, do an exercise. Then I'm going to shower, because that's my way of locking in. I'm taking like 7, you know, like 3 showers a day, but not because I'm dirty, but because that's my way of being fully locked in. And then what I do is I always throw a football with my dad before every round, listening to music. And a lot of the kids, you know, because I'm combining my love for sports with chess, and really what's getting me into like the complete zone, what I always call like the state of flow. And that's a term that I always use, and that's really helped me. But I tell the kids to, that's what I do, but do what's best for you. I tell a story where when I was younger, I would want to play a video game during the chess tournaments. And my parents, reasonably so, were like, no, that's like bad idea. Like, don't play video games while you're in chess tournaments. My sports psychologist was like, no, no, no. If he wants to play, if playing video games will get you in the zone and fully relaxed and bring you to your happy place, do that. So I think that alludes to the fact to just do whatever is effective for you. But make sure you do something that will help you recover. And I think that's with a lot of these mindfulness exercises, not everybody's going to resonate with the same exercise. Every time, actually, there's always a mix. At the end of every session, I ask, like, raise your hand if this was your favorite or if this was your favorite. And there's always a mixed group. So that's why with this asynchronous aspect, I want to provide as many tools as I can. And then the user can kind of handpick, you know, the two or three that they love the most, that they resonate the most with, and then continue to practice that. Like you said, it's easy to kind of give up and kind of stop doing it and lose focus. So trying to make it really like a small toolbox that they could use. So it's not too overwhelming.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm not familiar with the palming exercise, even with some experience in this field. And Elizabeth Spiegel mentioned that in addition to palming, the one that she said she thought was really helpful for her students at IS318 was box breathing. Are you able to explain that one on what's predominantly audio only?
Yeah. So box breathing, I think you can get a good idea of it. I also call it samurai breathing. That's a more extensive version. That's what I mean, going to the point of like simplifying the terms and simplifying the exercises. Basically, box breathing is a breathing exercise where you're breathing on four different counts. So you breathe in for 4 seconds, then you're going to hold your breath for 4 seconds, then you're going to breathe out for 4 seconds, and then you're going to hold your breath for 4 seconds. So basically creating this box-like motion. However, what's unique about this exercise is while you're breathing, you're going to close your eyes and try to draw the box while you're breathing along. So what I do, if you know, whoever's listening right now, take a second. I close my eyes, and for me, I always start in the bottom left corner of a box, like at a point. And I'm gonna breathe for 4 counts, drawing up vertically, and then I'm gonna hold my breath for 4 seconds. But while I'm holding my breath, I'm gonna draw a horizontal line across, and then while I'm breathing out, I'm gonna come down with a vertical line, and then for another 4 counts, I'm gonna connect the box and come horizontally. So while you're breathing, you're also visualizing it. So you're triggering a lot of different parts of the brain that are actually, sometimes helpful for chess and chess calculation. But it's a way to fully center down, deep breathe how you would in traditional meditation. You know, breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth with pursed lips is what I always tell the kids to do. And to use that exercise as a way of resetting. That's not an exercise that I do over the board or that I do, between tennis matches. I always do palming, but box breathing is something that I would do between matches. That's a little longer. That's something that you can do for as much time as you want. For the kids, I did it for 2 minutes with Elizabeth's kids. We're a little younger. The first time I did it with them were 2 minutes. Then next time I did it with them were 3 minutes. So as you can see, I'm just trying to slowly build it up for the kids. And when I meet with them this summer, we'll do it for 5 minutes and to really cultivate and sharpen their tools of meditation. Because, being an effective meditator is something that I think is a trained skill and something that you get better at, just like anything else, the more you do. So I'm trying to slowly ramp the kids into a way that they would not be overwhelmed, but also reach, really impressive levels as well.
Excellent. All right, well, Nate, I'm going to ask you about one or two more techniques, but first we need to take one more break and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time. No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we are back. And Nate, I have one more question from something that Elizabeth mentioned, which is affirmations. So what would be an example of like an affirmation you might teach?
So I'm glad you asked that. I wanted to tell this to the user, and this is an affirmation that I tell myself, I would say like 100 times a day. And it's something that I tell myself during chess matches. And I think that's something that everyone can really benefit from. There's affirmations that work for everybody. What I say is, no matter what happens, I love and approve of myself completely. And that's something that I repeat in my head before tests. I'll say it out loud. But honestly, before this interview, I said it to myself, I would say like 10 times. And it's something that would, it completely, wipes out all the stress that's going on for me. In the long scheme of things, the most important thing to do is love and approve of yourself completely, non-judgmentally, and to love yourself. And I think in the, you know, looking back at it, you know, you kind of think like, get really caught up in one specific chess game, but you look back like everyone who's listening right now that's played a chess game might get really upset after a game, really deflated, but looking back, it's not going to like kill you. It's not going to change your life. So just no matter what happens, the most important thing that you can do is to love yourself. And that's why this message has done so much for me. And I always tell it to the kids. But there's other messages that, you know, if people love this message, start to use it. But if there's something else that you guys tell yourself, that's awesome. I always do like the three C's as well, like calm, confident, and composed. That's something I tell myself less often, but that's something that I reiterated to the students that I've worked with, and something that I think is a really important motto as well.
That's great. Well, Nate, I mean, I'm super impressed. The whole thing I think is a fantastic idea, both for, I mean, for chess players, but for teenagers in general. So your plans are build out the website, get things asynchronous so that people can do it without your being there. What else is in the MindMate's vision?
Yeah. So a big part of it, which I'm glad I kind of want a little shout out for it just going forward, but I'm actually in the process of making a MindMate's notation book. So you guys can be on the lookout. Basically, what's unique about this MindMate's notation book is before and after every match, I'll have a normal traditional notation sheet. And in the very front of the book, there'll be some exercises, palming and box breathing being there as well. So kids can refer to that in addition to the website and whatever asynchronous aspect I can use. But there's going to be a pre-match and post-match reflection sheet before and after each match. It's only going to take, I made it short, like 30 to 45 seconds. But truly, and the questions that I ask are not chess related. They're related to being fully locked in. What I say is, you know, like, am I proud of myself? How am I feeling mentally? Am I ready to go into this chess game? Like, and I always ask them to set a goal for themselves besides that's not chess related, going to that chess game, whether it's going to be to smile as much as they can, to breathe more, maybe use palming like once or twice during the game. But I think that this is such a powerful tool that because I mean, I think there's a lot of different like journals on the side that a lot of people keep, but not something that's all together where basically you're keeping yourself responsible for it, that, you know, you finish a game, you go on to the post-match reflection sheet, you know, reflecting, what I always like, reflecting is super, super important because it creates meaning out of any lived experience you've had. And in this case, it'll be a chess game. But And then you're going to take a break. And then obviously before the match, you're going to try to go and I'm just basically trying to have the person, the user go into the match fully there and going back to the roots of my program, bolstering their peak performance. And that's what this aims to do. And I really, you know, wish I had this tool when I was younger, because I wish I could go back to my 9-year-old self and see what I was thinking, you know, with my little sloppy handwriting. Seeing I lost, let's say, against, you know, I'm sure, you know, you guys know Max Liu, a really high level, and, you know, I lost him a couple times in the very last round, and to just feel my, that for the national championship, and just to feel my emotions, and to just see how Nate as a 9-year-old was feeling before the match, maybe what caused, the loss, then how I really felt after the match. And I think what's unique about this is, and what's important is to be fully transparent with yourself. If you're feeling tired, I want you to, you know, to write down that you're feeling tired, before the match, and after the match, being really transparent on your emotions. And I think that it's a really special tool that, a lot of kids could really benefit from. And hopefully if parents are listening to this, thinking that their kid could use this as well, hopefully that this is something that could also be pretty special. So I have this that aspect coming out in talks with a publisher. Hopefully I'm targeting by the end of year. I really hope I can get it by December Nationals, but I've never done this before, so I could run into some issues. But between that and the website, and then hopefully down the line an app, as you can kind of see, the viewers on YouTube, I'm wearing a MindMate shirt right now, creating on the website, maybe some merch as well. Continuing regardless, you know, doing all this asynchronous aspect, but to still go in and out of schools. But to make it so hopefully I can be doing MindMates for, you know, a lot more years than just the end of high school. And, you know, when I go to college and I won't hope, you know, maybe I won't be in New York City, there is this aspect where everyone can really access the material online between the website or an app, and then hopefully at the same time have this notation book sitting beside them ready to go for a tournament. So
excellent. Good stuff, Nate. Well, listen, I mean, we do have a decent number of chess educators who listen. So if there's anyone who's interested in potentially pursuing it or just keeping up with the program as it continues to develop, what should those people do?
I mean, I'm in such an early stage right now. I will tell you right now to email me at natemaster@icloud.com. It would be natemaster@icloud.com. But also to everyone, any user who still wants to be engaged, want to follow my Instagram, MindMatesChess. So MindMates, MindMates, and then chess. I hope you guys know as well chess. If anyone wants to reach out, I'm seriously in such beginning stages of this process that I'm so passionate about, and I'd love to do and be in contact with anyone that wants to speak to me more and interested in having me in their schools or wanting to help me on this journey. I'm a completely open book. I'm really, really appreciate the platform of being able to speak to you guys, and getting MindMates, something that means so, so much to me and that's resonated with so many kids already, more widespread.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. And part of the reason I wanted to have you on is I do think chess is just such a mental game, you know, it can mess with your head so much that I do think that it's, you know, as with many things, maybe not everyone will decide that mindfulness practices are for them, but I certainly think that for all chess players, it's at least worth exploring.
Yeah. Worth exploring, you know, very small amounts of your time, but, you know, it's to help your performance and to help you gain this competitive edge over your opponent that, you know, the people that aren't listening to this podcast, want to have any, you know, any access to this material or knowledge of it. And same with it. I tell the kids that I work with that, you know, not a lot of students, not a lot of middle schoolers are getting exposed to mindfulness, especially mindfulness as a tool to help performance. So that's why I'm targeting teenagers, because it helped me so much and it was so unique to my story and gave me this competitive edge over my adversaries. And it's something that hopefully that a lot of other people can take away from that as well.
Nice. Maybe I'll try that one on my kids. I'll be like, listen, this
try
is
it.
Top secret. You know, no one else is getting to try
No, this. I like that. I tell them with like the palming thing, you know, it does mind tricks on your opponent. Like if the opponent thinks they're crying, you know, maybe you're like all upset, but in reality, you know, you're just helping yourself. So there's a lot of mind tricks that go along as well. However you want to phrase it to whoever you want to, you know, send this to or, you know, tell about this, whatever you can do is amazing. So thank you.
Excellent. Well, great to chat, Nate. Yeah, and can't wait to see how the program develops. So thanks for coming on the pod.
Of course. Thank you, Ask.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.